Hey, it's Dan Bach. Before we get to the podcast, I need to tell you about my friends over at Blue Apron. I certainly hope you give these guys a look. They are the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the entire country. And I'll tell you what, the one thing I love about Blue Apron is it allows you to eat healthier. And they got some incredible menu items. And it's at a pretty affordable price, too. Less than $10 per person per meal. And Blue Apron's going to deliver seasonal recipes, pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals right in the comfort of your home. It's easy. I know, guys, you're like, I don't cook. Well, guess what? Step-by-step instructions make it easy. So even the most novice cooks out there can figure it out. Variety, got lots of new recipes each week you can choose from. And of course, very flexible. Some weeks you might be traveling, you can't do Blue Apron. Other weeks, you know what? I'm going to be around, want to spend more time with the wife, girlfriend, or family. Blue Apron is a good way to eat healthy and have a lot of fun. So if you haven't checked them out, make sure you do so. You got to check them out by going to blueapron.com/fantasyfix. And here's what they got going. This week's menu is there, and then you'll be able to get your first three meals for free. And you're like, I got to pay for shipping though, right? Wrong. With free shipping, blueapron.com/fantasyfix for three free meals with free shipping. You're going to love how good it feels, tastes, to create that home-cooked meal with Blue Apron. So don't wait. blueapron.com/fantasyfix for three free meals, free shipping. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Roto Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Dan Bach talks to the biggest personalities in DFS, delivers commentary on the industry's most important topics, and gives you the advice you need to help build winning lineups.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head games, you are just going to lose.
You didn't really think we were going to get rid of that, did you?
Here's your host, the one and only Dan Bach.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Welcome to another edition here of the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast, and excited to talk to my next guest here today on the show. He is no stranger to Roto Grinders, he only helped found it, and let's face it, anytime you win $1 million and you work for this company, you're going to be coming on this podcast, even if you are the CEO. So super excited, super proud to have Cal Spears join us here today to talk about an unbelievable weekend over there in on DraftKings, where binked a millie. Cal, welcome, my man. What's going on?
Dan, thanks for having me. It has been it's been a long time since I've been on, but yeah, I mean, I think with this occasion, I have to make my second ever appearance on the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast.
Yeah, coming out of the shadows a little bit. And unbelievable weekend. And, I mean, has it sunk in? I mean, that you won $1 million playing DFS? Like, I remember I was with you before, and I think it was one of the FanDuel finals where we saw T Speedo, and we said, hey, give us the, you know, show us the phone with the $1 million in the balance. Like, did you take a screenshot of that? I mean, come on, man. What's it like?
I took quite a few screenshots. Like, as the team climbed, took quite a few screenshots. I was trying to text him to Sheena, my girlfriend, to tell her to come to the bar and hang out because I had a sweat. And my internet was actually terrible, so she never received any of those screenshots. So she had no idea until afterwards. But yeah, I've got some screenshots. It has not sunk in yet. I don't know if it ever really does. It's kind of crazy that this like fun hobby awesome game that we play also has these crazy prizes that, you know, I'm always chasing, and I'm always always a motivating factor, but then actually winning one that big, like, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and it's one thing to, you know, walk into a live final and know you've got a chance to win $1 million or a couple million dollars. You've been in that position, haven't won it, but it's another thing just to be on a random kind of Sunday afternoon where, I mean, let's face it, you've probably thrown thousands of entries into Millionaire Makers over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really hard. Like, I mean, you're going against hundreds of thousands of entries. And then, let's face it, you probably, I mean, at what point in time in the afternoon did you, like, think, like, oh, my God, like, I really have a shot at this?
I tried not to get too invested in that part to where I was scrolling down to see, you know, what combinations were behind me, because I think I got into first place on that touchdown right before halftime. And I assumed that there was just an amazing amount of teams behind me. Like Dak Prescott already had a few touchdowns at that point. I figured I was in a very likely position to get passed. So I didn't want to start scrolling down and looking at all the combinations that could get me. So I was trying to just, you know, play it cool, had a couple of drinks and impatiently waiting for that halftime to end. And then when he crossed the 100-yard mark, it was pretty early in the third quarter, or sometime in the third quarter, I think, when he passed the 100-yard mark.
Yeah.
That's when I really started to think, like scroll down a bit and see what else was coming after me.
And, you know, you're a guy who I know, like, you're a bar sweater. Like, you know, you go out, I think, on Sundays and watch football. I mean, you don't have the package at home or anything. So what was it like kind of being in that public setting, knowing what was on the line? Like, I think you said, like, cruising to victory was with you. But, like, did the people around you realize, like, what was going on? Did you have other people, you know, following along? How did that whole sweat process play out?
I think when something went my way for whatever team I was rooting for, I think the fans of that team in the bar were like cheering with me. And then they're like, oh, he's our buddy. He's also a Cowboys fan. And then I cheer for the Packers the next play. And I think people just got confused. And then at the end, when I was like, you know, jumping for joy, I think people finally caught on to it. But yeah, I mean, I'd been traveling last week. So I didn't have like a lot of time to play. I was actually in Las Vegas, where you can't even enter teams. I was tired when I got home Saturday and didn't play a ton this weekend. I put 30 teams in, which is actually less than what I would normally put in. And the game's locked at 12 my time. And we're doing Results DB live now. Mm-hmm. We're still, you know, very much in the process of getting that off the ground. So once the game's locked, I just got into our Results DB Slack channel and was chatting with everybody and watching the tournaments as they went live. And, you know, once that looked good, I checked my phone. Brian was going to the bar. I met a few other guys at the bar and brought my iPad with me in case I needed to make any late swaps. But, I mean, it was just the most casual going to the bar and having a few beers day as it could be. And about 4 hours later, my heart was pounding and I was sweating $1 million.
We'll get to the lineup in a moment, but I want to stay in the moment of the sweat here for a second. In particular, that final play where Ezekiel Elliott, let's face it, you know, Zeke and, you know, there was Zeke and then there was Dez and then there was some Prescott there kind of at the end. That final play, I saw some video of it, and you looked like you were going to throw up, like, to be honest with you. Like, how was that feeling when you saw the fumble Ruski, and then you saw Zeke literally start running, like, nobody near him for about 20 yards? Oh, I mean, that had to have been just crazy.
It was pain. It was painful. I think I had 6 points on the Zeke team. Maybe it was 5. So I knew he needed a long way to go, but the play, like, those are just like comical every time they happen. It seems like maybe they'll last 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds. And from my perspective, looking back on it, that play lasted like 30 seconds. It was awful, gut-wrenching to watch. And then when Zeke got the ball, I think that's the point where I just turned around and couldn't watch anymore. But yeah, I just made the ending that much better when they finally fumbled it.
Let's get to the team here, and then we're going to talk some other DFS stuff. And, you know, I've got, you know, again, Results DB, a free plug for that. You can go through and very simply just put in Cal's name, and we can see the exposure of players in the 30 teams he put in. We can see the winning lineup that he made. And it's kind of interesting to you know, look at, you know, a couple of these things here. And the one thing that, you know, there's a lot of talk about George Kittle. You know, he was on your winning roster, 21 fantasy points at the tight end spot. And I look, though, like your exposure to Kittle was not crazy high. You only had him, I believe, on 3 of your 30 lineups. So you were at, you know, 10%. So you didn't, I mean, obviously that's overweight on the field, but it's not like you legitimately went all in. Talk about that play, that process. And, you know, I know you consume a lot of content here on RG. And was there something that stood out in terms of that play to get him into your lineup?
It was, so the only guy that I had, like, planted the flag on was Aaron Jones. He was someone that I knew that I wanted to be high on in, you know, in games where I played the Dallas Green Bay games and in games where I didn't. On this lineup, like, this was a point in the morning, you know, just woke up Sunday morning, and at some point I was consciously trying to get Odell, AJ Green, and Antonio Brown, all three on the same team. And that's how George Kittle happened. It was just like, how do I afford to do this? And just like looking through my options, I remember Silva specifically talking about how George Kittle ran 44 routes in week 4. And, you know, min price tight end, perfect correlation play with a min price quarterback or near min price Hoyer. And then I could run it back with Dante Moncrief at, I think, 3,900. So I was able to get this a pretty good upside correlation play and still get those three big wide receivers and not tank at running back. I could get Melvin Gordon and Aaron Jones. So, I don't know. You know, every time I build a lineup, it makes sense to me, and this was just another one that made sense to me. And it just happened to hit really hard.
No, and it actually, I mean, it's frustrating as hell sometimes, but it's also encouraging because I looked at that lineup and I said to myself, like, that's a very buildable team. Like, you have the Hoyer-Kittle combo, which allows you expensive wide receivers. You get some exposure there to Green Bay. And, you know, you're going to be way overweight, or you're going to be very contrarian with Green, Beckham, and Brown, which, let's face it, those guys were not highly owned on weeks where, you know, Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley were super, you know, chalk here this week. So, like, I look at that lineup and it's like, that's a believable lineup. You know, sometimes there's somebody in there that doesn't even make sense, but, you know, a 3% owned or 1% owned George Kittle made a lot of sense when you're running Hoyer, and the fact that tight end really sucked this week. It was a believable play, and, you know, it absolutely is a believable lineup, you know, in my eyes. And
let's see. It's a victory for the correlation plays, thought out lineups, because every once in a while you see those crazy ones win the million, and you start thinking, maybe I should play three wide receivers without their quarterback, too.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you didn't, you know, it was a well-constructed lineup that, you know, I think, again, was not kind of out of the realm of possibilities of, you know, having a big day. Now, you're right. You planted the flag on Jones. He was in 46% of your lineups. That was upwards of like 41% over the field because he was about 5% owned. The one guy I don't really see you having a lot here was Todd Gurley and I believe Le'Veon Bell. I don't see either of those two guys much at all here. On Le'Veon Bell was 23%, so you weren't totally off on him. But I don't see Todd Gurley anywhere. Was that a conscious fade for you this week? You had three of 30, so 10%, so way underweight on him.
Yeah, I would say it wasn't that like I hated the play, but it just didn't go high enough up my list that I had any interest in it. I by no means thought that he was going to, you know, continue the obscene pace that he'd been on against the Seahawks defense, divisional game. It just didn't seem like the great spot that a lot of other people had. So he didn't, and he was expensive. So he didn't make it too high up my list. You know, I still would have played him if I could afford him. But whenever I got up into that range, I was probably going to find a way to get to Bell anyways.
Yeah, and the other guy that was interesting that you faded who hit and who was, I think, the chalkiest guy on the slate, at least maybe even at wide certainly at wide receiver, T.Y. Hilton, which is interesting because you had the San Francisco side. You did run it back with Moncrief. Let's face it, he didn't win you the tournament at only 6 fantasy points in the game, but seemed like you were light on T.Y., but it kind of also goes to show, like, just because chalk hits doesn't mean that you have to have it to necessarily win, because he was one of the more popular guys in the entire tournament and had a crazy good game.
Yeah, and I won with a 217 out of 240,000 teams. And if I'd have gone Dante Moncrief up to T.Y. Hilton, I would have to come down 2,100 on one of the other big receivers. But I'm sure there was another 40 points to be scored there, and still have just like a very believable lineup, like what you were saying earlier. So it's interesting, out of 240K lineups, like how far you can be from that perfect yet also believable, buildable lineup and still win.
Yeah, you're right, because if you went to T.Y. and maybe brought one of those down to Jarvis Landry or something like that, like, you probably would have still been there, you know, potentially as well. But that's the kind of cool thing, and I think it's something that I talk about a lot on the content that I do, is, and that's where ResultsDB kind of can help you, is to learn by looking back at previous weeks and previous builds and take something from that. And I think that's something that we can do, you know, kind of looking at your lineups and other lineups. So I certainly hope, you know, everybody uses that tool moving forward. Let's talk a little bit, you know, DFS, talk a little Roto Grinders. I mean, we just came up on, what, I think 7 years this past year of running RG.
Yeah.
And
crazy.
It is. It's really crazy to kind of see where we are and, you know, the growth that we've had, but also, you know, how the industry is really continues to evolve and change from where we started. I mean, there was that screenshot of when we first got rolling and there was seemingly like 12 daily fantasy sites that we were promoting at the time. And now we're down to about 4 or maybe 5. I mean, did you expect this sort of consolidation over time? Is that something that you kind of expected to see? And, I mean, what are the thoughts on just like where we are, you know, 7 years after, you know, having this idea and implementing it with Cam and Riley?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to think about over the course of 7 years, you know, even remembering back to like what I thought. Where I thought things were going, you know, everything was just, a very slow start in the beginning. And we just, you know, all of us knew it was going somewhere and that tournaments and having these big prize pools were going to take us there. But everything was so small, we didn't know how long it was going to take. We just knew we were on the right path. And then, when DraftKings came in, started spending a lot of money, and FanDuel responded, spending a lot of money. That's when, you know, Roto Grinders and the whole industry really took off on a rocket ship, hockey stick growth. We were very acquisition focused. Like, and by that I mean referring players to the gaming sites. You know, we would just we do what we do, provide as good of content as we can, work with the best players, and but, you know, our business was pretty much referring players to the sites. And then it was really the day that the Attorney General in New York took his action against FanDuel and DraftKings was kind of the day that rocket ship growth ended and led us to where we are today, where there's a lot of consolidation. For a year, there wasn't a lot of investments being made in the industry, but there was good legal battles being fought and won. And, you know, now that I think the consolidation phase may even be over. FanDuel and DraftKings merger didn't go through. There's not a lot of sites left to roll up, but there are new sites coming in. And, you know, we just saw Paddy Power Betfair, you know, make a really big deal for Jeremy Levine's draft app, which I think is a strong signal for the industry that, you know, maybe there is growth coming again, but not just in a salary cap competitor to FanDuel and DraftKings, but in new formats and smaller formats. So yeah, with salary cap, we've gone very much to being focused on premium content today, which is a change I think is, you know, very obvious on the site. When you go to the front page, we'll have, you know, lots of premium content in prime spots. And, you know, 3-4 years ago, you would barely have seen that.
Is that like is that just something that is the evolution of the market in general? Like FanDuel and DraftKings are, and even Draft now are, you know, have the ability to spend so much in their own player acquisition that, you know, it's harder to, you know, steer players there than it used to, and that, you know, the monetization and growth of the company has to change. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, there is. I think that there is a big piece of that. It's, you know, the market has matured for salary cap. There's still plenty of growth, plenty of new players to be had, but, you know, nothing like what we've seen in the past, in my opinion. So, you know, as the game matures and as people become better, there's a higher demand for premium content to help people on that path of becoming a better player. So, yeah, we're serving a market now that's the avid players that are willing to pay for premium content to help them find an edge. And there's less players that we can reach to send to FanDuel and DraftKings than what there was in, you know, 2015. But at the same time, with sites like Draft and new sites popping up, I still think there will be, some of the referral business that we've always been, and reasons to have free content and the types of promotions we started with. But yeah, there's definitely a focus shift to premium content for FanDuel and DraftKings.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of development we see down the road in terms of tools. And, you know, we've shown a lot of commitment to that. And, you know, it's one thing that I'm excited about that we've done. I'm also wondering, like, is there going to be a time where, you know, some APIs open within these? Because let's face it, I mean, you're also hamstrung in terms of what you can and can't do on the tool side of things. Because you've got data issues, scraping issues, like you're not allowed to do that at, you know, there's certain restrictions on what you can and can't do. I mean, do you think the sites are going to be more open on that front down the road? Do you think they're going to continue to be guarded? I mean, do you have a feeling on how, you know, that side of things to, you know, allow outsiders like Roto Grinders and other, you know, tool-based companies out there to build things that integrate within the sites a little bit more than they currently do?
Yeah, I do think it's coming. I think that it was in the plans back in 2015. I'd had some talks with DraftKings about, you know, how the API should work. You know, the good thing about the API is that it's a two-way handshake, so the user is always prompted and can say, yes, I'll give Roto Grinders access to XYZ so that they can build this tool or show me my data for this tool. I think we were going to get there in 2015. And then again, after the New York AG took his action, all of that stuff just went on a total halt. And they became very much focused on consumer protection and just privacy and just making sure they had everything completely locked up in their terms of service. And I think now that they're able to loosen that, and that they've taken care of the things that they need to take care of, that we should be able to slowly start innovating again. I think that it's only a good thing for everybody. If the user knows exactly what data they're sharing and why, and we know what we can get and we can build tools for it, like, it's just going to be a better situation for everybody. You know, easily track your bankroll without having to download your spreadsheets and your CSVs and upload them to Roto Grinders like you do now. Easily build lineups on our lineup HQ and then actually choose what contents you want to put them into from lineup HQ.
That would be great.
Instead of then going through the upload download process. So I think all those are coming, and, you know, the best part will be for mobile, when you can quickly build lineups on one app and quickly put them into your DraftKings app.
Yeah, I hope we get there sooner rather than later. And I actually think that, like, there's advantages for companies to do this where, like you said, in the past, maybe they looked at it from a privacy issue. But I think, you know, outside innovation and allowing other companies to provide that, because let's face it, they have their own, you know, resource issues. They can only do so much themselves. But if you open things up to other companies, whether it's us or Fantasy Labs or whomever, I think it's just going to make a better user product. So I hope that some of those conversations are being had, because I agree. I think it's kind of the next frontier in terms of tools. Let's talk about the next frontier in terms of the games themselves, though, here, Cal, because we've seen a big change this season in the structure of games. We've seen games taken out. We've seen focuses on smaller slates, and we've seen some, you know, outspoken, you know, DFS players about some of these changes. And, you know, I've certainly been a part of that at times, where I feel like there's less concentration on building compelling fantasy games as much as there is, you know, just trying to run as many games as they possibly can. And I realize they're businesses, they're out to make money, they're out to garner profit. Like, I understand that, I get that. But I also feel like this is, you know, at some point in time, you're going to kind of, the pendulum's going to swing too far, and it's going to potentially alienate a lot of players. A lot of those players are part of our community, some of the more high volume guys. What are your kind of thoughts on some of that movement that we're seeing, and what the future might hold on that front?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the reality is the sites are trying to figure out how to run viable businesses. And each passing day where they're not viable businesses, they have to take more and more actions to get there. And I'm very bullish on them getting there. I think that, you know, this is a game that people are going to want to play and are going to want to continue playing. It's fun. They're building out new game types. They're trying to find a broader audience, trying to find games that appeal to more players. I think that in the process of doing that, that they're trying to reach a more casual player. So they may not care as much about alienating a top player, someone who is pulling a profit out of this site. I think a lot of the outcry we've seen is from the profitable guys. They know that these rake increases affect them directly. I think we'll see. It's noticeable that they are keeping the rake increases in games that are $50, $30 or lower. So the higher stakes stuff that doesn't really affect the common player, the average player, that's where the rake is increasing, and not in the high stakes stuff where you have a more rake sensitive player. But, you know, if you're a rake sensitive player and you're playing in the smaller games, you know, you got to be aware of two things. One, the sites aren't making any money yet. They're still losing money. And two, most of the people that you're up against are not rake conscious. They're more playing for fun.
Yeah, and I think it's, and I get that side of it. And my biggest, and I've let them know, I've asked them about it on podcasts we've done in the past, is I just feel like there should be more awareness for even those players to have, you know, easy knowledge of what fees they are paying on a game. You know, we've got our rate calculator, yeah, which is tremendous. Like, I'm glad that they allow us to offer that. Like, they could easily say, no, you can't do that. So I give them credit for that. But we're also talking about a fraction of the people who are playing the games, you know, have that, and the majority are not doing the math in their head. And I just don't see drawback. Like, if you want to increase your fees, that's fine, but let's have it, you know, upfront and available for all players to kind of see what it is. And if it doesn't bother them, then no problem. But, you know, I don't feel like they're hiding it. I feel like it could be.
I totally think that's fair. And honestly, like, I've been using our extension for so long, our extensions that show the rake right in the lobby, that, so, you know, I don't even think about that most people don't see it. So yeah, I do. I would have no problem. I would support them, you know, putting the rake, putting more details in there. And I also don't think that it would affect their business at all, because I don't think that you're going to make casual players start caring about the rake. I think people that care about the rake are going to do the math and think about it and think about what it takes for them to be profitable, but that the majority of people are not going to do that. And, you know, I've seen that all the way back to poker days, where I remember a site in poker, I think it was called World Poker Exchange, started up an entirely rake-free site. And it was, maybe this was 2006, and they were on the cover of Card Player magazine, and you know, everybody in my community thought it was a big deal and that it was going to change poker. And then, you know, the reality was all the sharks went there and traded their money back and forth for a while. And it quickly died off. You know, what you need is a fun game that attracts a huge amount of players. And then, you know, a small number of those players are going to win, and most of them are not going to win. But as long as they're having fun and have a chance to win and continue doing it and feel like they're growing and getting better or getting something out of it, then you can have a thriving ecosystem. And I think we'll get there. You know, I'm not sure if we're there yet. I do worry about the rate getting too high, or that it might already be too high. But if it is, then they'll just have to adjust.
And you know, at some point in time, I mean, you've got to think that if the high volume guys don't think it's beatable, they're just going to stop playing. And whether or not the you know, the people who are, you know, doing it for a living or whatnot, they look at it and be like, hey, I can't beat it, they're going to stop playing. And you would think they would be able to see that and be like, okay, well, we've reached the tipping point where it's too far. I don't know if we're there yet. I see a lot of people complain. I also still see a lot of people register games. So I think it'll be interesting to see when that threshold is finally crossed for, you know.
Yeah, we know that there's some inflection point, and that point probably changes at each buy-in level. And, you know, I think our gut reaction is that they're towing the line. Some people would say they've crossed it, but no, I don't know. I still see a lot of people playing, so. It's, you know, it's not something that can quickly be determined, but they do need to figure out the long-term ecosystem. And the longer they operate without turning a profit, the more critical that becomes.
I want to talk a little bit about the future beyond just that aspect. But, you know, there's a lot of potential changes here in the gaming laws in this country. I mean, SCOTUS is going to rule on sports betting. I think the hearings start in December, and you know, we could have something, you know, early 2018 that could potentially change the way that, you know, sports gaming exists in this country. How do you think that's going to affect daily fantasy? Do you think that, you know, the peer-to-peer fantasy game will have more of a downswing because of this? Do you think it remains ineffective? Do you think that it's something that will, you know, we'll see hybrid games? Like, what's your feeling on that front and the potential effects it could have on DFS and kind of the game that we are playing today?
I think that DFS market is very established and real, that it's not going anywhere. I think that FanDuel and DraftKings have such a big leg up in that market that, you know, it would be hard for someone like Harrah's or Betfair to come in and take anything from them. You know, for Betfair to create a liquidity-driven salary cap game that offers $1 million to first place, you know, we're not going to see that happen. So I think it puts, you know, FanDuel and DraftKings in a great position for the changes that are inevitably coming. You know, we've got a bunch of just absolutely stupid laws in this country that we're slowly but surely overturning. Like, I do think sports betting will be legalized in the next few years, at least in a large number of states. You know, it might take longer for that to become an online activity, but everything's moving in the right direction. I think FanDuel and DraftKings are, you know, they're very much focused on DFS, but if they also get to take part in those opportunities, they're in a great spot, because who wouldn't want to put your team in for the Sunday Million Sunday morning, and then right at noon, you know, make a couple of, like, join a poker tournament called the Sunday Million.
Yeah.
Where you're playing with all the guys that you're competing against in the same fantasy sports tournament. Like, I think that I think it's coming. I think that we'll see. In the meantime, we'll see more variant games that are smaller, lower skill level, but still fun and still fantasy sports. But that, you know, we're kind of moving. Some of the games we're seeing coming out now are already moving more towards like a simple sports betting type game. And, you know, that could just continue. And then at some point, maybe we just have, you know, the ability to bet on a game on the internet. That would be incredible.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's something that we should have. But, you know, and I my feeling is, like, if you're going to overturn everything, then let's do it right off the bat. And let's face it, technology exists for people to do it. And it should be done. There's models, whether it's Las Vegas, whether it's, you know, in the UK. I know you've been over there where, you know, you can do it right on your phone. And, you know, it just feels like if we're going to go down that path, I'd love to see it kind of get done. But I also think the appeal, and I think the interesting thing on that front, Cal, is like the big appeal that I've seen with DFS here over the last couple of years is people like to spend a little bit of money with the potential to win a lot of money. And there's not a lot of structures in sports betting, you know, that you look at that are spend a little bit of money and win a lot of money. And I think, like, there's going to be crazy innovation on that front to because they see where the demand is. Like, I think the demand comes in with, like, hey, you know what, this is gives me an all-day sweat, and who knows, I could be like Cal Spears and win $1 million for a $20 entry, where when you're betting sports, unless you're hitting a 30-team parlay, and that might not even be enough, good luck. So I think there's going to be a huge hybrid of games and innovations that kind of follow that format, because I think that's a huge appeal to what we have going on in DFS. I mean, heck, you look at opening day NBA. And this is a perfect example. Opening day NBA, both sites have $1 million contests, and it's a two-game slate, okay? And they're, what, $4 and $3 buy-ins, with first place paying like $200K. I mean, from a game standpoint, it's not the most compelling game out there. You only got four teams to choose from. You're limited in your number of options. But it's low dollar buy-in, and people can win incredible life-changing money. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how those games are formulated. And who knows, you know, maybe DFS sites can do that better than, you know, the companies that have really kind of had this same formula with sports betting over the years. And that's something that I'm kind of excited to see in the next, like, 5 to 10 years, to see what they come up with.
That's a really strong point. And if you think about what they're doing now with different slates, where, you know, they're already figuring out how to present this to the user, where you're not just playing salary cap. We have a ton of games you can play. And, you know, how does the user find them, and how do they play them, and how do you teach them how to play them? They definitely would have an enormous edge on somebody who's not already doing this testing and offering the kind of things that they are now. And, yeah, I mean, those games sound fun. Like, I think you're right that there's a lot of innovation coming if things go our way.
Yeah, and I think, like, the peer versus peer aspect is something that is still very desirable for people. And I think that's the one thing where, you know, I love to see kind of integrated into it. You know, I get into this back and forth with Purdom all the time about skillfulness of sports betting versus DFS and whatnot. And I always go back to the, you know, it's me versus you. You know, that's the one thing that I like, where it's not necessarily a house banked game, which, you know, maybe those things, you know, will come through over time. And we're already seeing some of them even in fantasy. But I also feel like as a user, you feel like, you know what, you're matching wits versus somebody else, not versus built-in edge potentially for, you know, the house. So I don't know. It's an exciting time, and I know that, you know, we both will be watching that closely to see what happens. But I do think there will be, I'll say ramifications, but I think it is going to help even, it's going to shape even what we see and what we do today. So throw that out there.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Well, he is Cal Spears. He is the CEO of this very company that you are listening to this podcast on. And hey, man, it's good to kind of catch up with you over, you know, the podcast. You know, we talk all the time, but not everybody gets to hear it. But $1 million, incredible. When I next time I make it to Nashville, you're getting the Camus, okay? Because I missed out on the celebratory Camus, and I'm very disappointed at that. Like, that's literally like my favorite thing in life, and I saw that you got to indulge in it, and I didn't even get to enjoy. So next time it's your tab, I'm buying some Camus on it.
Deal. Oh, the Camus. The Camus was incredible Sunday night.
Man, I'm so
next
good.
One's on me.
Next one's on you. All right, Cal. Thanks so much for the time. And, hey, good luck with the rest of the season. I'm sure, hey, you got a live final ticket out of it too, right? You get to, you haven't won a live final yet. So you've been to a zillion of them. Yeah, at least you're going back. You know, what, Miami on draft.
Oh, yeah. I've still got plenty of goals and now, you know, more motivation to get there.
And more bankroll as well, which certainly doesn't hurt. So thanks a lot, Cal. We'll chat again down the road. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.